Welcome to the last year of Rabbi Rakefet at the Young Israel of Hollywood, the fourth of four for this year, correct? We're January 17th, 2016.
I think this is the 11th of 11
since he got off the plane a week and a half ago.
Never worked harder in Gullish.
Sorry.
Are they all different?
Yes, every shear was different.
Every shear was different.
Anyway, this is the final shear, Yom Tov Sheni. I did not choose it. It's a topic that's near. It's Harabias. Excuse me, Harabias. A topic that's near and dear to my heart. Only because 10 years ago, when I was in Eretz Yisrael for Rosh Hashanah, I was learning with Rebbe for Chodesh Elul, and the day after Rosh Hashanah ended, I called Rebbe. I said, Rebbe, my cousins are going up to Harabias. Can I go? So instead of answering me, he asked me back, "Are you going to go to mikvah?" So I knew if I went to mikvah, Rebbe's giving me permission. And that's just a permission for me. It's not permission for anybody else. So without further ado, Rebbe Amori, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet.
This is a very delicate question that is on the forefront of the Israeli religious society today. So first we have to begin. On this particular topic, we heard a lot of Torah from the Rav in the 50s into the early 60s. It was one of the favorite topics of Bris, Kudshim v'Tarot, and this is the heart of Kudshim, Kavanot. Never ever, when we learned it, did we think it would be Halacha L'maisa, but you all know that the history of our people has taken many curves since the mid-50s. Now, we have a basic question. Is there sanctity to the land of Israel today? We haven't lived there for about 1,900 years before the Zionist movement started the rebirth. And does that original sanctity remain? More than that, twice we came into the land of Israel. There was the Bir Rishonim and the Bir Shnia. The first time we came in, of course, was the Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua, David HaMelech, Shlomo, the entire first commonwealth. And the second time, of course, was Ezra. The sources on this are limited during the, if you talk about what I spoke about yesterday, the cold literature where we have so many different Sfarim, the Rif, the Rush, the Tur, the Rambam. But when it comes to this issue, the only one who really deals with it is the Rambam, is Maimonides. And the reason is very simple. All the other poskim limited themselves to halacha, which is observant in their times, which is tangible, which is part of our existence. So you look at the Shulchan Aruch, you're going to find four divisions, but all the halacha in the four divisions is halacha which is applicable at his time, and of course at our time. The Rambam is the only one who deals with what we call Hilchata de Meshichata. And that is not only Halacha HaNoheged B'Zman HaZeh, but the Halacha Li'atid Lavo. And the basic source, there's one very important source. I hear the Rav in my ears speaking, reading it, commenting on it. I'll try to stick to English. If you're familiar with my work on the Rav, so I, in either volume 1 or volume 2, I don't remember which volume, but I quote Rebbe, that Rebbe speaks about two different types of memories, an image memory and an event memory. A father has an image memory. The Rav was fabulous. This is, this is the Rav as a human being that is most insightful. He said, you can show a picture. You show a picture. He and his wife were looking at a picture of their children when their children were youngsters. So he says his wife sees the picture of, they had two daughters and a son. The girls were older. The son was my age. And his wife looks at the picture, sees the girl, sees the dress. And she can tell you, even though the picture is 40 years old, where she bought the dress, how she got the dress, how she dressed the girl, how her daughter reacted. That is called an event memory. She relives it. A man looks at the picture. He barely recognizes it's his daughter. All right, the wife hocked him Ibrim cup, hits him over the head. So suddenly he wakes up. It's his daughter, and that's an image memory. So again, these forms. This is a philosophical way of speaking, but not every woman, generally speaking, she has the event memory. A man has an image memory. When it comes to learning Torah, the history of Torah, I have an event memory. So that's why when I relive something, I either relive it in English or Yiddish or Hebrew, the way it happened. So it's the Rambam Hilchot Beit HaBechira, Perik Vav, Halacha Tet Zayin. And the Rambam here is dealing with an interesting question, that the sanctity of the land of Israel, according to the Rambam, this is the way he was posek at Gepaskind, that the original sanctity was eradicated, and the second sanctity of Ezra remains forever. And he explains the difference, that the first sanctity, I don't want to quote every word, it will take too long to analyze it, but essentially what he's saying is the first sanctity was through kibush. The Jews conquered the land. And when you conquer the land, fine, you conquer the land. The Germans conquered Alsace-Lorraine. When the French reconquered it, they lost their possession. Kibush, Mulchama, as long as you're the boss, as long as you have conquered it, as long as you control it, it's holy. But if you're kicked out, it's no longer holy. That's kibush. The second sanctity, the Rambam uses the words, Ela b'chazaka shechichziku ba, that this, you work the land. In Ezra, the Jews didn't come back with guns, didn't come back with airplanes, didn't come back with tanks, didn't come back with missiles. They came back because Cyrus permitted them back. And they came back and started to work the land and to build the land and to cultivate the land. And that sanctity, because it came about through Chizuk, through something chazakah, much more powerful than kibush, than fighting and conquering it. And when you conquer, today it's yours, tomorrow it can be taken away from you. But when you work the land, you plant the trees, you build the houses, that remains yours. And the Rambam paskens, Lefikach, kol mokom shehichziku bo'olei bavel v'nitkadesh b'kedushat Ezra Shnia, harei ze mekudash hayom. Anything that we cultivated at the time of Ezra remains holy eternally. Okay? That's in relation to Eretz Yisrael in general. But when it comes, and this is the famous part of the Rambam, V'loma ani omer b'migdash v'Yerushalayim shekedusha rishone kedushatan li'atid lavo. Why do I say that when it comes to Yerushalayim, that holiness from the very first time that David and Shlomo went into it, from that moment on, Yerushalayim remains sanctified until this very moment. It is never abrogated, never nullified. And the Rambam says, Lefi shekedusha tamigdash v'Yerushalayim b'pnei hashchina v'shchina eina b'teila. That Yerushalayim has a separate sanctity. It's not just the land that God gave us. It's not just that the Jews conquered it or worked the land. It is because the Shechina of God is there. God dwells there. That's his home. And Shechina, the minute the Jews came and built the first Beis HaMikdash, an abode for the Almighty, the Shechina remains eternally. It can never be nullified. And that's the psak of the Rambam. All
Right.
So you can understand right away, we now have a terrible problem, because if the Shekhinah is there, you're not allowed to go on the Har HaBayit, the parts that have the greatest amount of sanctity. We're all Tamei Meit. All of us are defiled. We don't have a Paraduma. We're lacking the ability Lihit Kadesh, Lihit Taher, to purify ourselves. And this is a very serious problem. As you know, a Kohen is not allowed to go near the dead. He's not allowed to get involved with any of the dead outside of his closest relatives. However, the Kohen's not going in Har HaBayit. So even if he becomes Tamei Meit today, he remains a Kohen. But to do the Avoda, to go on Har HaBayit, to do the Avoda, to do everything we read about in Davening, and everything we study in Mishnayot, and in Zvachim Menachot, in Kodshim, the Kohen can't do it today. We're lacking the basic ingredients to purify him. Well, according to the Rambam, we certainly wouldn't be allowed to go on Har HaBayit. But the Ravid, in Israel, by the way, it's Ra'abat. Took me a little while when I started teaching Israelis, because I started teaching Americans in 69, so the Ravid remained the Ravid. But in 71, I remember in Michlalar, a young lady said to me, Ra'abat, and I didn't know who she was talking about. All right, today I say Ra'abat. No one knows who I'm talking about, because I'm teaching Americans, many years. I left Michlalah in 85, 86, so I'm teaching Americans, and it's the Ravid. The Ravid takes issue with the Rambam, and the Ravid says that he has a secret. This is the way the Ravid wrote. If you're familiar, the Rav's eldest son, Osirav Soloveitchik, raised three very fascinating children. And his eldest child, Dr. Atara, marries the son of the Tolna Rebbe from Boston, Reb Meshulam Zusha Tversky, if I have it right. Well, for an Einigel, a great granddaughter, Reb Chaim Briska, marries the Tolna Rebbe, where, this is quite revolutionary, to put it best. I don't believe Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Briska, can be accused of having Kabbalistic tendencies. Reb Chaim was brisk, although he was not anti-Hasidic. It's very interesting. I had many Rebbeim, Litvisha. Most were very anti-Hasidic. I often tell the story of how I came home when I came shop Sunday to yeshiva, and I told my Rebbe, Reb Noach Bornstein, those of you who remember, why you? And I told Reb Noach, I was a high school kid, and I told Reb Noach I had spent Shabbos in 770 in Eastern Parkway, and I told him I went to a Buddhist temple, he would have been happier. But Reb Chaim was not like that. Reb Chaim Briska and the Reb Vevel, they say, was not like that. And of course, my Rebbe wasn't like that. But the Ravid, Professor Tversky, the Tolna Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, was a very interesting individual. I knew him quite well. Died young. I write about him in the introduction to the Rav. I'm talking about Professor Isidore Tversky, or Rabbi Yitzchak Tversky. He was Tolna Rebbe / professor at Harvard. You understand? There were two sides to his personality, and there was no contradiction. He did his doctorate. It appeared in 1961, the first edition. It was published, I should say. He did his doctorate on the Ra'abat of Posky years. And that was an epic-making work, because it was the first brilliant work in scientific Jewish scholarship done in the United States. In other words, until that time, any doctoral studies done in the United States were not on the level of what they did in Germany 150 years ago, 100 years ago, a little bit in France, partially in Poland, scientific Jewish scholarship had reached a very high level there. And Professor Twersky's work on the Rivet of Poskier was epic-making. One of his chapters is on the Rivet as a Mekubal, as a Kabbalist. And I'll just state this in passing for those who know what I'm talking about. When my classmate, the Reb Chaim, who's the gold letter standard today in scientific Jewish scholarship, criticized his brother-in-law's work. And anyone know what I'm referring to? The review when the book came out a second time, and in the Harvard in the Haifa Journal of Jewish Studies of Haifa University, Reb Chaim has a critique on many chapters. The one chapter he didn't critique was the one on Kabbalah. And I told my students, I think in Kabbalah, the Tolna Rebbe knows more than any of the Briska. So that chapter remained unscathed. But the Rivet of Poskier, right here where he comments, this is language you will not find in the Brisk terminology. He says, Sod Hashem liyureyav. Kach nikle misod Hashem liyureyav. That this knowledge that I have was revealed to me. It's the secrets that God reveals to those who love Him. I need not tell you this type of language. Only a Mekubal can speak this way. All right? I have in my family already Mekubalim, so I've gotten used to it. I called my youngest daughter the other day, and she said to me, Abba, guess where I am? I say, I know my daughter. So I say, you're at the Kotel. No. You're at Kever Rachel. No. You're at Kiryat Abba. She said, you're going in the right direction, Hebron. She was at the Baba Sali's grave. It was the Hilula. There are, I said, how many people there? Oh, a few hundred thousand. She was at the Hilula for the Baba Sali. So this is the Lashon of a Mekubal. So he says that the Rambam is incorrect. And just as the sanctity of the land can be dissipated, the sanctity of the Makom HaMikdash has been annulled with Churban HaBayit. The Rambam is incorrect, and the Rivet ends off his Hasagah, his critique. Lefikach hanichnas ata shem ein bo kares. Wow. And the Rambam, the Rivet says, anyone who goes into the Har Habayah today, there's no Iser of Karet. It's not that he says there isn't a prohibition, but the minute he says there's no Iser of Karet, it certainly makes it a lot easier to say, I can go up to Har Habayah. There is no severe punishment. I have to tell you, reliving my Rebbe's words, and I would not agree, I live in Eretz Yisrael, but I have to be honest. The Rav, in the middle of a, probably was a Yahrzeit Shir, like he was discussing the Rambam, the Rivet, and thousands of people listening. And I remember when he quoted the Rivet, Lefikach ein bo isa kares, and the Rav went on, and avu is the Shechina gegangen, and what? So what does the Rivet mean? What, God disappeared? God doesn't exist anymore? Who are we? What are we talking about? The Kedusha is gone? No. It means that the Ribbono Shel Olam followed the Jews into exile. And the God went with the Jews to Spain, to Franco-Russia. I'll paraphrase my Rebbe, to Hollywood, Florida, and he followed the Jews and is with them in exile. And I'm quoting Rebbe. I can't say that because I get upset when I see a good Jew staring me in the eye and living in Gullus. But what can I do? I am who I am, and I'm a Litvak, so I can absorb from my Rebbe, but I also can have my own opinion. The Rav taught us that too. Don't Don't do what I do because I do. Only do it if you think I am right. And you understand already, two of his three children live, Rabarin and Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Very hard to me. The world is not the same for me with the death of Rabarin Lichtenstein. It's a different world. But Tova and Chaim lives around the corner from me, and Tova lives in Alon Shvut. So Baruch Hashem, the Rav had to be do something right, because the majority of his grandchildren live in Eretz Yisrael, and Lo Aleinu, he paid a very, very high price. As you know, his grandson, the son of the Tonda Rebbe, Rav Moshe Tversky, was murdered by the cousins of some of the leaders of the United States. You can guess.
He was a Harnofsing.
You know, the shul in Harnof. But let me go a step further. Assuming you can go up to the Har HaBayit, that there's no Issacharet, but there's another part of the coin. Even if the Har HaBayit does not have the intense sanctity it had during Bayit Sheni, certainly there are different laws that apply to the Har HaBayit than any other place in the world. And here too I want to quote the Rambam Hilchot Beit HaBechira. We're now quoting Perek Zayin, Halacha Zayin. And this is crucial. Af al pi shehamikdash hayom charev bavanoteinu chayav adam b'mora'a kamo shehaya noheg ba b'vinyano. Even though the Makam HaMikdash, the Har HaBayit, and all that surrounds it does not have its full sanctity today, but you have to treat it with your deportment as if it was still standing. Lo yikaneis ele l'makam shmuta l'yikaneis l'sham. This is, of course, the Rambam, lefi his viewpoint, lefi shitato. You can only go in places that don't have the ultimate sanctity. That's number one. If you walk in there, lo yoshev, you're not allowed to sit down. You're not allowed to tell jokes. V'lo yekal brosho, where the Beit HaMikdash stood. And he quotes the pasuk, shenema, and this is a Gemara, et shabtotai tishmeru, Umigdashai Tirahu. The Pasuk says that you should observe Shabbat and fear the holiness of the sanctuary. And Chazal say, Ma Shmirat Shabbat li Olam, Af Mora Migdash li Olam, Sha'af al Pisha Charev, Bikidushato O Maid. And very, very powerful Rambam. It's based upon Chazal that Shabbat exists no matter where we live, no matter where we are. We all have to observe Shabbat in Hollywood, Florida. It's not that we can come and say we left Israel, the holiness doesn't apply here. You know, b'chomo shavoteichem, no matter where a Jew lives, he has to observe Shabbat. Similarly, the holiness of the area of the sanctuary of the Har HaBayit of the Akedat Yitzchak, that holiness has to be felt and respected, even though the area has been destroyed. All right, these are the basic sources. Halach l'maisa. It's very hard for me, as a Talmud of the Rav, who felt them, Rambam was correct, I don't go up in Har HaBayit. However, as I will explain shortly, I will never discourage anyone from going, but you have to follow the rules and regulations.
Isn't and there a big difference between not an Iser Kares and being Mutter?
What has happened in modern times, because so many people have wanted to go up in the Har HaBayit, Tremendous research has been done. Rav Shlomo Gorin is one of them, but a lot followed after Rav Shlomo Gorin. I actually have two volumes at home with very detailed maps exactly where the point was and what had the Kedusha of the Kadosh Kedoshim and the Kedusha of the areas that are less holy. And they have mapped out exactly where you can walk where there's no prohibition whatsoever, what you're alluding to. That it's not just that there's not an Issa Karate, there's no prohibition. But the Yirat HaMikdash, that this is the Har HaBayit, they have many halachot, and this is what I alluded to.
Is that based on archaeology? How do they get an orientation?
Based on archaeology, measurements, based on descriptions we have of people who visited and described different areas, displaced on where we believe the Eben HaShtiyah was. Again,
it's based on where the Haravite was and when Hortus, where they were. Widened it and
enlarged
added
it,
to it,
right,
to the south, which is the reason why the Muslims built their mosque in Aqsa outside of the Holy of the Holy of Ours.
So their Eben, is not our Eben.
No, their Eben is into the Dome of the Rock, which is not a holy place for them. They never were davening there until the Six Days War. They have erected their mosque on the side, which they didn't want to touch the Holy of the Jews. And for many years, they did not dare pray into the Dome of the Rock.
I have, hold off for 1 second, if I may answer it. I have diagrams at home in these books exactly where they feel the original Holy of Holies was, and around it, the various degrees of Kedusha. But what you have to remember is you just can't walk up in the Har HaBayit. You have to take off your shoes.
Anyway. I don't have a problem.
You have to go to mikvah. You're not allowed to carry anything like a wallet or anything vachadik, anything that is mundane. And this is why I told David, you have to go up with the group and you have to do whatever you're told, because every group of Jews going up, they have Rabbanim going up with them, explaining. Reb Moshe David Tendler, Reb Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law, has gone up. But I want to shift sideways. I personally am very hesitant to go up because I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and Bal Nefesh Achmi, what I spoke about yesterday, if I'm a Talmud of the Rav and my Rebbe paskened what he paskened, although it wasn't La Halacha then, it was more in theory. But nevertheless, a Talmud of the Rav remains a Talmud of the Rav. I don't believe Reb Aaron Lichtenstein ever went up. But I know that Reb Aaron and others, and yours truly, we don't discourage. But I want to move sideways now. This has become a burning issue, not because of halachic issues, but because of political reality. And what actually happened in 67, a young lady told me yesterday, she heard a story that Moshe Dayan turned to the Rabbanim and said, what am I supposed to do with the Har HaBayit? I never heard that story. What I heard, but I wasn't in Israel in 67. I got there in 69. But what I heard was very simply that Moshe Dayan naively perhaps thought that by giving the Waq the key and telling them, look, we're not going to interfere with your worship, you continue as you do until now, we Jews are not going to interfere, we are more concerned with the Kult al Hamaravi, and Moshe Dayan thought he would work out a type of pshara, compromise, where both the Jews and the Arabs could continue to worship, the Jews underneath, the Arabs on top, b'shalom uv'shalva. In theory, he may have been very right. It could very well be that the Rabbanim, including the chief rabbinate, were happy with this solution, because they too face the quagmire of Jews going up to the Har Habayit, and at that point, certainly there was no major research done exactly where is holy and which is what part is, isn't holy. In addition, once you allow Jews to go up, it's not just Jews, it's tourists, it's Goyim, it's Jews going up without going to mikveh and fully and with shoes on and all that goes with it. Could be the Rabbanim were very, very happy with this solution. Unfortunately, when we came in Aliyah, we yet were there at a period when an Arab saw a Jew at Gitzitit. He shook. He didn't raise his head. I saw that with my own eyes many times in the Old City, in parks in Jerusalem. But time has marched on. The world, the liberals, the humanists, the leftist Jews, call it what you wish, the Arabs today do not fear a Jew. If anything, you know the news this morning outside of Israel. We just had a miracle in, there were many incidents, but the incidents with the army, they blew away. This morning, the attempted murderers. But a very big shul, I know the shul, part of my own family, my brother's family, part of his family davens there, and this is the shul of Mordechai Eliyahu. It's in Kiryat Moshe, bordering on Givat Shaul. And here they see three suspicious teenagers, and they caught them with big, big knives. And there's no way you can stop people from having knives. They need knives in their kitchen. They need knives to slaughter animals. Well, they slaughter animals. They want to slaughter Jews, lo aleinu. So we had a miracle this morning. So there is no longer fear. And the Har HaBayit has become a touchstone of who owns Yerushalayim. And today there is a lot of thought in the Torah world, the religious Zionist world, that going up to Har HaBayit is not just a halachic question, but it is a question of the highest political importance with ramifications over the entire world. And more Jews started to go up to Har HaBayit, and the present infada broke out as a result of more Jews going up to Har HaBayit, which shows you that this is really making a statement to the Arab world. What this gentleman said is absolutely true. Jerusalem, I believe, is mentioned once in the Quran, and it's mentioned 850 times in the Tanakh. Until 1967, Jerusalem played a very, very minor role. The Temple Mount, the mosques in Arab theology, and with 67 and our reclaiming the holy city, the holy land, the holy mountain, Har HaBayit B'Yadeinu, it has become, for them, suddenly, they have reinvented their religion, and Kimi Tzion, Teitei Tzorah, Davar Hashem, Yerushalayim, they have put their Koran into that pasuk. Anyone in the world who is open-minded and listens to Jews speaking, professors speaking, Netanyahu speaking, we say it openly, check the Koran, check the Tanakh. But we're living in a world where, unfortunately, common sense, logic, rationale do not win out. But I want to go one step further and show you something very interesting. We Jews love to fight. It's Amksheyorov, it's the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, you cry when you read about Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Jew that ever lived. And you see all the machloket, particularly in next. I was Mavis Sedra this morning, because I have a busy week flying back. It's not that I can get back and collapse. I forget about my students, my children, my grandchildren, my great grandchildren. Yeah, Baruch Hashem. And then my students. Next Sunday I'll be saying Shir in the Kol of Be'ezrat Hashem. So I was Mavis Sedra this morning. I wake up early, I can't help myself. So you daven late, and my boss here, David Goldis, and I have to thank David. He brings me here, I can't say no to him. We go back a long way. I yet knew his grandparents in the Rabbin in 1961 in Philadelphia. Remember his grandparents? Gornish. The Gornish family. The Gornish family. That's the family in Brooklyn. That's his family.
Rabbi Gornish?
Yeah. That's David's. That's the family. That's his cousin. David is related to the owner, one of the owners of the Miami Marlins, and he's related to, that's Mel, right? And you're related to Rabbi Gornish in Brooklyn, the Hot Gracie Yichus on all sides. So, I was mavasugging, this Sedra B'Shalach is so sad, Moshe Rabbeinu did such miracles for the Jews. They saw Kriyat Yamsuf. They saw Masharat HaShivcha. The Tachumah says, the Medrash says, Masharat HaShivcha al Yamsuf lo ra yecheskel bambuzi b'chezyonot shelo. What a Shivcha saw on Yamsuf, the greatest prophet, didn't see with his most profound visions. And 2 minutes later, they're telling Moshe, drop dead. Right or wrong, they're complaining, no food, no drink, no water, no this. What are you doing? Why'd you take us out? Why'd you bring us? It's unbelievable who the Jews are. I can tell you even better. And unfortunately, when I can tell you that
they or we,
I spoke about Russia Wednesday night. They asked me to speak, and it was a powerful talk. Because I, for decades, I couldn't open my mouth; I would be in jail. And now the floodgate is open. My book in English went through censorship, but nothing was taken out. And the Mossad came out with a book a year ago, and that's the real McCoy from the archives. And the stars of the book are Malka and Aaron, two little kids from the Bronx. So it's very emotional to me. So I spoke what I didn't tell them Wednesday, and I'll tell you now. And you can, if you heard Wednesday, this completes it. We went the first time. The Mossad, we were briefed half of, from May 1980, we went in June of 81, after all the, in January of 81, after all the briefings. We did well, and I felt Rachmanis say, you're overwhelmed, the Jews in Russia suffering, and the knock on the door, and at least we can help, it's not the Warsaw Ghetto. So I offered my services to the Mossad to keep the chain of... I was sent to teach Talmud and to keep the chain going, and we lived a dual existence for 10 years. A normal existence and a different existence that very few knew about. The army covered for me, so no one would know. I wouldn't be in class one day a week, one day in 10 days. I was in the army. I was in the army. It's not a lie. I gave a lecture at 10 o'clock. I was finished by 12, all over. I had these maskirut in the army who were inevitably from the Eidot HaMizrach. Their love of Torah was overwhelming. Kvod HaRav, Shemanu Al HaTzah. And they, what they prepared for me to eat. And then I'd go 3 blocks away with triple security to get in the center for the Mossad's branch that dealt with Russian Jewry, that had one of the 5 computers in the country at that time. I still see the computer, the screen on the wall flashing. We had every name of every refusenik, of everyone requesting a visa to get out. Any information smuggled out went into the computer. You can understand its greatness. So now Malka and I get involved. We send over 200 people to Russia. At every moment till the collapse of the Soviet Empire, we had 4 shluchim, 2 couples in Russia. And there was a whole process. I had to go through a security check. So now in 81, the first time we were there, and there are pictures. If I had some of my books here, I had the Mossad book, I could show you the pictures. The cowboys and the Indians were friends. Every last Jew got along. And these were people in Sirov, in refusal, suffering, lost their jobs, all of them PhDs. And because they're suffering, they start to ask, why are we suffering? So they formed Zionism. Had they been allowed out in 19, when they applied, let's take the SS, allowed out in 73 when they first applied. The Kogan family, the Esos family, any Khosharovsky family, they would have been Jews like everyone else. Tell me, there are no Chabadnikim here. If I'll say this in front of Chabadnikim, Tell me, does Netanyahu daven three times a day? Chabadnik says to me, no, he davens three times a day. All right, that's Chabad, but I'm a little bit more realistic. Tell me, Ben-Gurion had kishtan and a langishmon esrei. Paula would have chopped his head off. Vera Weitzman's hatred for Torah, they were in rebelling. They all came from homes, but they hated religion with a passion, which is... We've spoken, when did I speak about that? I spoke about that. Thursday night in the private home talk. Okay. They would have been like every other Jew in Israel, like all the leaders, but because they remained there, why am I suffering? And ultimately it leads, there's only one answer. My whole Zionism comes from the Torah, it's trailed as part of Torah, and if you don't have Torah, you're not going to be a Jew. So in 81, the few Torah Jews, everyone was friendly. When we got back in 85, was there a split? Oh, what was going on? And I would send shluchim, using Chabad terminology, shluchim, and one group would say, if he teaches for us, he can't teach for them. And if he teaches for them, we don't want him to teach for us. And this is absolutely true.
Okay, SS group was the other
one? Polanski. SS and Polanski were the main groups. Then you know what I'm talking about. Then there was a group in the middle. They tried to bridge the gap. The Schifrins. If you would do a sociological study of what happened later when they got to Israel, you would have a bestseller. So that's the way we Jews are. In Eretz Yisrael today, and you know, for decades already, for maybe 100 years, it's going to be 100 years in 2019, you can celebrate 100 years of crucial split in the Torah world. Why do I say 2019? Because in 1919, Agudat Yisrael began as a formal organization. They were planned to begin in 1912 and 1913, and they called for a tremendous meeting of all leaders all over the world. They were scheduled for 1914. Rav Kook traveled, got stranded in Europe. The World War broke out, so they couldn't function. Then in 1919, they start functioning, and they made two very basic decisions that supposedly were never rescinded or negated. One decision was that no people can have an opinion in Agudat Yisrael, only the Rabbanim, it's what you call in popular language, Das Torah. Pronounce it properly. Da'at Torah, they'll kick me out. Das Torah. The other opinion was that if you believe that there can be Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Israel before the coming of Mashiach, you're a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, the group is depraved, degenerate, the balance, surreptitious, malevolent, abicorous, bummy. And you should know the Eidei Charedid never lets Agudat Israel forget this. In every issue of Haedah, I think it comes out once a week before Shabbos, they rip Agudah apart. Who permitted them to be part of the Knesset, the government, the sovereignty in Israel? Now, this split is a real split, and it relates to what we call in Matan. These terms didn't exist when I went in Aliyah, but Charedim, Charedi, you call maybe Black Hat, Shkorim, but today it's a formal term, it's not a pejorative term, it's a descriptive term, Charedim. The religious Zionist movement, of course, went through many different names, Mizrachistim, Mizrahi, Maftalnikim, it went through many, today it's Bayit Yehudi, Chadalim, a part of it, Charedim Datim Lumi, many different terms. What's very fascinating is, and thank God, today the State of Israel is heading into, it's been around since 1948. It's not just been around since 1948, but it's a democracy. A democracy is terrible, it's horrible. I would love to see a kingdom, Malchut-based David, but after having lived in communist Russia, let me tell you, until we have Malchut-based David, there's nothing better than a democracy. And this is why, if anyone criticizes the state of Israel, my presence, I call my grandsons over to beat the hell out of him, because Israel's a reflection of its people. You have criticism, come live in Israel and help change the country, make it better, make it more holy. And this has happened. Ben-Gurion, you know, the theories that Ben-Gurion gave in to the religious Jews only because Ben-Gurion felt in 20 years there won't be a religious Jew left, and it could be this is correct. He allowed Chuppah V'Kedushin at the hands of the rabbinate, the army should be kosher. He made, I spoke in Miami Beach, in North Miami Beach on this. He made tremendous compromises. And there's a whole machloket. Did he do it because he saw his father and mother's image before him? Or did he do it because he felt and they'll be the new type of Jew? Okay. Time has gone by, and many of the great Zionist leaders of the country have their grandchildren, great-grandchildren live everywhere else except Israel, which Rav Kook predicted in a letter that reads almost like a prophetic letter written in 1908, where he writes, if there's no Torah, ultimately the greatest Zionists will, their descendants will hate the land and leave the land. The Aliyah to Israel, with the Russian Aliyah, we've had miracles. Tens and tens and tens of thousands have become religious Jews. As you see, all the famous Russian politicians have shown me Shabbos, including Lieberman. No one realizes that Lieberman's wife, his daughter, covers her hair like this. She's a balat shiva from the time she was in elementary school. And her mother became a balat shiva. And Lieberman, if he would be Mechal Shabbos, they'll kick him out of the house head first. But you got to know. And Sharansky certainly is a Shomer Shabbos, with or without the cap he wears, not to be identified. But then you come to Yuli Edelstein and Elkin and the others, there's no question who they are. The Americans who have come in Aliyah, a Reformed Jew, or today conservative Reform is basically the same, they have to be crazy. What are they leaving America for? Was ist schlechter? What's happening bad here? A religious Jew, there are reasons why he's coming in Aliyah. The French are pouring in today, and I don't know where all that religion comes from, but I've yet to see a French guy, Mechal Shabbos. I see some of them without kippah, old-time svatim, walking to shul on Shabbos with their talis in their hand. They haven't put the kippah on until they reach the shul. Near me is Ohel Nechama, which is the Alsace-Lorraine shul built by German reparations money. And my apartment, I live in one room with three closets. I'm not going to tell you what my apartment is worth, but I guarantee it's worth more than 90% of your homes here in Hollywood. Every day there's a note in my box. Anachnu mukhanim leknot hadirot b'inyan chazeh b'mezumanim b'mechir tov. Every day. And when I tell people I live on the road, when I tell people I... When I tell people I live in Rehov Rechaim Berlin, they correct me, Rechaim Berlin. Now, why am I saying this? So, you see, the country has shifted. The head of the Mossad is my cousin, right. my family. It's unbelievable. I felt Nishtam Mincha. The head of the Shabak, that Tzadik Yisalom, the head of the police, Al-Sheikh, can give a better Devar Torah than I can. All of Netanyahu's surrounded, Haaretz goes crazy that they say in order to be an aide to Netanyahu, you have to write from left to right and you have to wear a kippah. You finally have to be a native English speaker and you have to wear a kippah. They're going crazy. So you see, the country has shifted. This has affected the Haredi world as well. And this I view with such joy to see. You know, the fourth generation of Haredim brought up in Israel, it's not all of them, and not all of their rabbinic leaders, if you know what's going on. If you think we have machloket, the word machloket doesn't exist to describe what's going on right now in the Haredi world. I just mentioned Yerushalayim, Shari Chesed in Yerushalayim, vis-a-vis certain areas in Bnei Brak, and if you hear what they call each other, you have to put cotton in your ears or you have to rip kriya. God have... And these are so-called Gedolei Yisrael, okay? It is frightening. But the average Haredi kid today says, you know, Israel's a great place. Why can't I celebrate Yom HaTzmaut? I'm happy to be here. I get education for nothing. I get health care for nothing. I mean, we pay taxes, but we get tremendous returns. Socialized medicine has not worked on the level it works in Israel, anywhere else in the world. People from England, people from Canada, socialized medicine, they tell me it doesn't come near the level that Baruch Hashem we have in Israel. All right? More than that. These kids don't want to be poor. There's no mitzvah to be poor. And you look at Mechon Lev. I can go on and on. I'm watching the clock. Mechon Lev. I daven there once a week, at least once a week, because when I give shir and gris in the afternoon on Sunday, I daven mincha there. The vice president of Mechon Lev is my student. The president is, when he went to YU, he already heard the name Rabbi Rothkopf. So I know them intimately. 2,000 Haredim, Shkoyach, 2,000 Haredim are in Mechon Lev today. 2,000. We're talking an institution with thousands upon thousands of students. Baruch Atom. When you dive in there, you have every type of head covering under the sun. And you see with the army, Mechon Lev gave birth to the first Haredi Hezda with the army. It's headed up by a product of Miami Beach, Rabbi Carmi Gross. All right, Rabbi Shragai Gross's son, one of his two sons, Shragai and Carmi. Carmi heads this up. A Jew came over to me, a very wealthy Jew, a builder in America. His father was a YU Musmach 1913. As my father sat and learned all the time, I decided to make money. He came in Aliyah in the 80s and early 90s. He's making heavy money in Israel. He's building all over the place. I left an outsider to build successfully and crack the mafia. This is an achievement. So he came over to me. We daven in the shtiblach, you know, 6,000 people daven every day in the Katamon shtiblach. So whenever I met my daughter who lives around the corner, I'll daven in Chamarav there. So he comes over to me. One time we're walking home after Marav, and he says to me, Reb Aaron, he says, some guy came over to me about a Hezda Haredi, wants some money. I say, tell me, was his name Rabbi Carmi Gross? He says, yeah, that's the name. I say, give him three times what you thought you would give him. It's a fabulous innovation. Hitaka told me, gave him four times what he originally thought he would give him. So, now let me tie it all together. What's interesting here is that this topic of Har Habayit has... thank you. This topic of Har HaBayit has ultimately affected even the Haredi world. And you see the concept that we touched upon. All right, a machlokas, the Rambam, the Rabbat. Fine, we're paskin like the Rabbat. We're paskin like the Ravid. All right, then there has to be Kedusha Tamakom. You have to know where you can walk. You don't want to go on the Holy of Holies. Yeah, and you have to know how to go up to the Har HaBayit and what it means, the year up. And you can go into Rambam, the sources I quoted. If you go further, you'll see very detailed descriptions of how one should act in the presence of this sanctity. So you see, the second factor I mentioned, that it's now a political statement of the utmost importance. It has security inferences as well. If we show possession and let the world know this is ours and we're not budging, it could make us a little bit safer. The world has to know. You can't play games like the State Department would like to. We're going to get the Jews out of there for you. Could you picture two states in an area which is smaller than Rhode Island? Look at Rhode Island on the map. And one state is filled with murderers who have been raised that the greatest good deed they can do is to kill Jews and to be part of an intifada and a jihad with all that means. You got to be insane. It's self-abolition. self-denunciation. Call it what you wish. But if you make a statement, this is ours, you're not budging us. If you want to be friendly and be a getoshav, we'll give you autonomy, we'll treat you with respect. Those of you who heard my classes and where I differ with my Rebbe in Bnei Akiva, Rebbe Meir Kahana, understand what I'm saying. But this means that going up the Har HaBayis has a lot more than just a halachic output. It is political and probably security. This has affected the Haredi world as well. A few weeks ago, a whole group of Zildomanim went up the Har HaBayis. You know what I'm talking about? Zildomanim. To say it very briefly, we Jews split and resplit and resplit. There was a Zilberman family from Germany that ran away to England. You know of that family because growing up there was the Zilberman Chumash, the translation of Rashi and the Chumash into English, two volumes. That family winds up in Yerushalayim. It's a very large family. There are many, many, many children. If you have many children, Kanayin Haran, they follow in your footsteps, you have many grandchildren. Before you know it, you have thousands of relatives. This family is very famous because with all that we speak about Balei Tshuva, there is one Balei Tshuva, the quintessential Balei Tshuva, who captured the imagination of all of Israel. His name is Uri Zohar. Uri Zohar, when I came in Aliyah, was Mr. Entertainer, Mr. Movies, Mr. TV. Israel had one station at the time, little black and white. And once a week, Uri Zohar, you never saw his movies. I will say this about Uri Zohar. He experimented with drugs and other things, but he was not a playboy. He had a wife, he got married, got divorced, it was a high school deal. Then he remarried. He didn't run around with other women, but he was Uri Zohar. Then you saw in his program, 1 week, he shows up and he's wearing a kippah. So this is my own eyes. Second week he shows up and is wearing tzitzit. The third week he covers up the semi-nude woman in back of him. The world was going crazy. And the next thing you know, Uri Zohar has left TV, he's gone into a yeshiva. And it's an unbelievable story, because his wife and teenage children went along with him. And the world never knew who made Uri Zohar from. And then in the election of 88, it was a terrible tragedy. A bus was blown up, and a woman, and I believe it was two children, were killed. She was a Zilberman. And at the House of Mourning, they saw Uri Zohar every day. Well, the newspapers suddenly ran after Uri Zohar. What do you have to do with the Zilberman family? And then Uri Zohar told the story. It's a little hard for me to tell. It happened a few blocks from my house. Uri Zohar was troubled. You know, he grew up, he didn't know how to, you know, if you have a secular education in Israel, you don't know how to open a chumash. Understand, you can read Hebrew and know Hebrew, and read Bialik, but you don't, chumash is like we studied Greek and Latin in YU, okay? Uri Zohar was told there's a smart rabbi in Shari Chesed, you can ask him your questions. So he comes in and he pours 100 questions at Rabbi Zilberman. Rabbi Zilberman says, I don't have to answer any question. I'm inviting you to my house for Shabbos. On one condition, you can't drive, you have to stay in a hotel nearby. Uri Zohar can stay in a 10-star hotel. You know, money's not a problem. But there weren't 10-star hotels yet. He stayed in the president. And not the president, the king's. The closest, 3 blocks away. And he tells the story. He came, and you have to spend the whole Shabbos till after Haftalah. And he says, when Haftalah was over, I had no more questions. do you mean? He says, when Rabbi Zildman walked in to make Kiddush, all his children stood up for him. He says, I have two children at that time stood up for me. They laugh at me. They poke fun at me. They think they know more than me. He says, all my questions disappeared. And he became the quintessential Baal Tshuva, you know, going Haredi, which is among Baalei Tshuva. And the Zilbermanim went into a special area of Chinuch where they followed the Mishnah, Chumash, Tanakh, Pirkei Avot, the program in Pirkei Avot. You don't start learning Gemara until you're 15. You have to have the entire background. In addition, they wear tefillin all day. And you see these kids running around the old city, and there they are. You see, they're called Zilbermanim. And in addition, they're very open. They come from Germany. They live in Britain. Torim derech eretz. They get professions. But they are charedim. They have to vote degel hater, if you understand. And a whole group of Zilbermanim went up on the Har HaBayis. Oh boy. Then a well-known Belzer Chassid, who can buy and sell half of Hollywood, Nishtan Orem Yid, he went up in Har HaBayit. And boy, the criticisms were muted. But you see, it's part of the syndrome that, thank God, we've lived to see that the cowboy and the Indians have to learn to be friends. The Charedim and the Mizrachistim, as I would like to refer to myself, we're one people. It's one Torah. We've had differences, but time works it out, and you have to move forward in dignity and in unity. And I'll end off with a Devar Torah from the Rav. So what have we said today? We began with some very important sources that can be checked out. If you're interested in the books, Hamor, that's a yeshiva that broke away from Rekhas HaRav. They put out a few volumes in Har HaBayit with measurements. The Chumimis had articles. There is a world of material here. Halacha l'maisa, I find it hard to go up as an individual. I may yet change my mind, but I will not discourage anyone who asks me. And there are a lot of Rabbanim going up who give advice, their detailed sheets. You have to view it on the general Israeli scene. And as I said, if Zilbermanim can go up and a well-known Belzer Chassid, you can see already that the security factor overtakes all other considerations, and we have to bow before this. In these machlokot, when I was younger, I thought I could change the world. Today I'm just concerned with keeping Rakefet solid. But I used to dialogue with Ar Sameach. I can't go into all the details. I can entertain you for hours with some of these dialogues and some of my comments and witticisms and the coming out of it alive. But one thing I can tell you, and I now take you back, and very important, the Rambam I'm going to show you. When I did basic training in the army, as I said yesterday, after the Yom Kippur War, they took every male who could stand upright under the age of 40, anyone 39 and younger. So here I am in basic training, and it's like watching a movie. I watched a movie last night. The movie was fine. In the middle, they have to show a terrible sexual scene. You know, you can't have a movie without some sex, and you can't have a movie without curse words. My grandchildren all grew up in it, you know, all Israeli born, but all actually born all in Jerusalem, and they all know the curse words. Baruch Hashem, they've been a Torah, they don't use them, but if you watch a movie, you watch TV, you pick it up. Fine. So here I am in basic training. Everyone is cursing. Curse, you know, keeps you going, running, as I said yesterday, and they're cursing the commanders. Of course, they cannot curse in Hebrew. In Hebrew, I hear the curse words, Ben Zona. It's a whole sigil, Yavama. Fourth parak in Kedusha. Ben Nida. Fabulous. I've given so many shayur on it. What's a Ben Nida? What not? Lachika. Oh my gosh. There are no curse words in Hebrew. But in English, in Arabic, Every Israeli knows the Arabic cry, and I also know the Russian curse words from my grandfather. Nayim Hara. I asked him, why don't you know Russian? He lived in Russia till he was 16. Didn't know a word of Russian, but he just knew Dan, Yet, and the curse words, which came in very handy in my work in the Mossad. Particularly, I'll never forget in Riga, it's a story unto itself, the ability to curse in Russian opened doors to me. I hear all these curse words. Listen, I'm a Talmud of the Rav, I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, I'm a Rosh Kollel. At that time, I don't think the Kollel existed, or 78. It's right on the border. It began later that year with a formal program. So I developed a way to curse the commanders without saying a bad word, learning Torah. And I would sell this patent every time I spoke in the army. If you're a good audience, I'm giving you the greatest gift I will ever give you, to curse your commanders and learn Torah simultaneously, concomitantly. And it's very simple. Look up the Rambam, Hilchot Malachim. I'm holding it in front of me. Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet. And the Rambam, quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the 11th Perek, Chelek, Rambam, says terrible things. It says there's a tremendous machloket, how the ultimate redemption will come about. The Medrashim argue with each other. Correct? You see, Agudat Yisrael, Mizrahi, 1919, Israel, what's going to be? How will it happen? Haredim, Mizrachistim. And the Rambam says, because there's such difference of opinion, Tipach Rucham Shemchashvei Kitzim, those that try to figure it out, may they drop dead. Tipach Rucham, lose your living breath. And the Rambam says, towards the Rambam, we will only know how it will happen when we live it. So Baruch Hashem, we're living it. But in the army, it was fabulous. Everyone is cursing in various languages. And Rakefet, Tipach Rucham, Shemachashvei Kitzim, and the Mafakeit is screaming at me, Rakefet, Matam Malel, what are you mumbling? Lomei Torah, Mafakeit, Yafeh, Tamshich, continue. My dear friends, thank you very much. We meet again in comfort and happiness.
Did the Rav ever say anything about Yom Tov Sheni when it's not Shabbos?
He went very smart.